This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The first day of school, an important test, or a big game, it's normal for kids to feel some anxiety in situations like these. But when it goes beyond a case of the nerves and becomes an ongoing struggle, the child may be suffering from an anxiety disorder. Here to talk about anxiety in children and how parents can help are pediatric psychologist at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Catherine Younger, and pediatric psychologist and researcher in behavioral medicine and clinical psychology at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, and assistant professor at the UC Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Natasha Cunningham. And later in the show, we'll hear about toxic stress and the long-term harm it can cause to children. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kate, Natasha, good to see you this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Kate, start off by telling us, what exactly is anxiety? What are we talking about here?
So anxiety, classically, is just worry or concern about something that's going to happen in the future.
Okay, so is it the same as stress, basically?
It can be stress. So stress, a lot of times, is kind of the physical reaction that happens when we're feeling strong emotions. And so anxiety, everybody has anxiety, and anxiety in a lot of ways is a really important thing for us to have. So we look both ways before we cross the street, and we study for tests, and we pay attention when there are strangers in the environment, and those sort of things help to keep us safe and help to keep us successful and productive. But sometimes some kids have so much anxiety that it starts to get in the way of them really being able to enjoy their lives and do the things that other kids are doing.
So what do you consider to be normal anxiety, Natasha? I mean, what level would be normal?
It really depends, too, on the age of the child that you're talking about and kind of where they are developmentally. So, for example, if we're talking about toddlers, it's very normal and expected to see separation anxiety from caregivers. If a child gets to be a bit older and the separation is getting to the point where they're avoiding school or social activities or avoiding activities they previously enjoyed, then it would become considered more problematic and potentially require some intervention.
So, to some extent, anxiety it can be a good thing. It's a natural alarm system. Is that a correct way to look at it?
That's exactly right. And everybody experiences some level of anxiety, and exactly right, that it can be a good thing, and that as humans we're designed to have anxiety because it tells us there's something important here that we need to pay attention to.
How common is it for children to have to deal with an anxiety disorder?
Mm-hmm. It's very common, in fact. Lifetime prevalence rate, so between childhood and adolescence, up to 20% of children will experience some form of anxiety. That could be social anxiety, separating from a caregiver, generalized worrying, panicky symptoms for no explained reason at all. So what it can look like can vary quite a bit, but in fact, it can be a very common problem.
So what you were touching on the different forms that it takes. What are some of the other forms that anxiety can take?
So, again, it depends a lot on the age, but things like being afraid of a particular object or situation, like fears of the dark or fears of dogs. Some anxiety can be more socially based. Some anxiety can result from traumatic experiences, so that kids who have been in accidents or lost parents or been in natural disasters often develop anxiety as well.
So you can have generalized anxiety. Mm-hmm. Is OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, also what you would classify as being anxiety for a kid?
Mm-hmm. That's another form of anxiety. And generalized anxiety disorder, those are kind of the kids who worry about lots of different things. So worrying about a parent not coming home, about getting sick, about what to do if friends don't like them, kind of the chronic worriers.
And these would be the kids who really, it would be to the point of maybe disrupting their sleep. They might be up at night. They might spend quite a lot of time worrying. I think where it becomes problematic is when it's severe, persistent, and chronic and occurring frequently. Any of those could be potential indicators that it may be kind of beyond the scope of kind of normal worrying and might be more of a problem.
What age do kids start dealing with anxiety disorders? Is there a certain age that you see it come on them usually?
So even really early in life, sometimes the first experience parents have with anxiety is around 8 or 9 months of age. Children go into separation anxiety when they don't like to be away from their primary caregivers. And then as kids get older, a lot of times you see kind of late preschool years into early school age years is when you start to see more severe anxiety disorder starting to develop, and some of that's because kids are out and about in the world a little bit more and are exposed to more things and can think about more things in a way that younger children don't really do.
Often once kids hit school age, some of these problems become more apparent because they may start to want to avoid going to school or avoid social activities with their peers. What we commonly see is separation anxiety tends to occur in younger children. And then as children age, they may be more likely to experience social anxiety. And adolescents can more commonly experience more of that generalized anxiety, that global worrying or the panicky symptoms. But it's also important to note that children can have onset of these disorders really at any age. That's just kind of the more common patterns you may expect to see. And another thing that I think is important to note is that it's not always obvious that children are experiencing anxiety. Some do express anxious thoughts, so they might overestimate the probability of negative events, or they might overestimate the kind of consequences associated with those events, how problematic they would be. They might have anxious behaviors such as heart palpitations or feeling really panicky or worried, and they may avoid situations. But there is a subset of children who may not express these worries, and it may be missed by providers or their caregivers. So I think sometimes considering screening for anxiety as part of just kind of a general wellness check can be an important way of capturing some of these kids who may fall through the cracks.
Yeah, and there are some people, including kids, who they tend to worry more about the day-to-day things. But can someone be that way and still not have an anxiety disorder? Can that just be part of their personality?
Absolutely. And I think for a lot of kids who end up developing more significant anxiety, that just kind of the way they've developed is to be a little bit more emotional and more sensitive. And one of the ways I like to think about it is kids almost have these spidey senses where they pay attention to all different stuff. And these tend to be very caring kids and very empathic kids. And there are a lot of really great qualities to children who tend to be on the more anxious side. And that kind of two other things that go along with that is that anxious kids a lot of times have parents who have had anxiety as well. And so just like we inherit what we look like and how tall we are, a lot of times kids also might inherit this tendency toward being a little bit more anxious from parents, as well as see parents reacting to situations in more anxious ways. And I actually forgot what my second point was.
But you're talking about genetics plays a role in causing the disorders. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else beyond genetics, or is that the big thing?
There is, and genetics is a part of it. It may not always be obvious, like in the situation. There certainly are examples where you could see a clear lineage of anxiety running in families, but it may not always be that obvious. About half of the kind of variance or the explanation for anxiety is also due to what we call non-shared kind of environmental factors. So those include things such as parenting behaviors, not that parents cause the anxiety, but sometimes by seeing a parent act in an anxious way or respond in an anxious way, but also just different sorts of events that may happen. So traumatic events that may happen. Female gender is a correlate of increased levels of anxiety. And also situations such as divorce or the start of a school year, those sorts of normative stressful events can cause anxiety. And we do tend to see higher rates in families who have lower socioeconomic status, and it may be because of just increased stressors those families are dealing with as a result of that.
And so more females than males, but that doesn't mean that the males don't suffer from this as well.
No, they absolutely do. We see rates of about 2 to 3 times higher in females than males, but and that also increases after females hit puberty. But you certainly do see anxiety can be a common problem in males as well.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So if I'm a parent, what should I be looking for? What kinds of signs should I be looking for that tell me my kid's got more than just a normal amount of anxiety going on here?
Mm-hmm. And so anxiety can show up in all different ways with different children. So some things to pay attention to are the things that your child may be talking about. So if they're frequently talking about worries that they have about the future. So as Dr. Cunningham has said a lot, anxiety is classically bad things are going to happen and I won't be able to deal with it. So that can be on your radar. For some kids, you will notice an increase in things like complaining about stomach aches or complaining about headaches or being really tired, talking about their hearts beating faster, just paying attention to the physical signs of anxiety. Some kids, you will see them starting to avoid activities. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to go to my friend's house or birthday parties. Some kids will show it as behavior. So you might see kids tantruming in different situations that are stressful for them, having trouble with sleeping, not wanting to eat. And so parents know their children very well. And so depending on how your child expresses it, you might be able to pick up on it in different ways.
And I guess, too, if it's interfering with their day-to-day life, then that's
a
big thing to look for.
Yeah, if kids are avoiding school, social activities, even things that they previously used to enjoy and participate in, I think that's a signal where anxiety has become problematic. So, for example, if somebody is afraid of spiders, that could be pretty normal and adaptive for humans, but if they're avoiding going outside or going into rooms where a spider previously was or it's really impacting their quality of life, then that's a signal that that could be problematic.
And so that would be a phobia? Is that what you're talking? That's a form of anxiety too?
That is, yes. Phobias are a type of anxiety. They occur in response to all sorts of objects and situations. So common ones that we see in children are dogs, insects, bees. Environmental phobias such as storms or water. Those are some example. And blood injury injection phobia. So the kids who are really terrified of going to the doctors and getting those routine shots or needles.
How well do pediatricians and primary care doctors do it at spotting the signs of an anxiety disorder?
So that's one thing I'm currently studying right now at Cincinnati Children's with our pediatric gastroenterology colleagues. So many times, providers and parents are able to pick up on anxiety, but there is a subset of children that have clinically significant levels of anxiety that are being missed. So we did one study in children with abdominal pain, and what we found was more than half of those children reported anxiety, clinically significant levels of anxiety that were interfering, but only 30% of caregivers were able to pick up on those anxiety levels in their children. And this is important because what we found is that the kids with higher levels of anxiety had more impairment due to their pain levels. They had higher pain ratings when they were coming in. And they're also the kids who are less likely to respond to behavioral interventions to help them cope with pain. And just to also make this point, we don't think that anxiety causes things like pain, but it could certainly be a factor that can make health conditions such as chronic pain and other health conditions worse.
We will continue our discussion about kids and anxiety, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Here to talk about anxiety in children and how parents can help are pediatric psychologist at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Catherine Younger, and pediatric psychologist and researcher in behavioral medicine and clinical psychology at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and assistant professor at the UC Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Natasha Cunningham. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Kate?
All right. So I wanted to kind of move the conversation more to how parents can help kids overcome anxiety. And I think about the really important things to think about is teaching children the difference between different kinds of feelings and really helping kids to understand that thoughts, feelings, and behaviors go very closely together. A lot of times what happens is that kids feel anxious, and so they naturally assume there's something dangerous about the situation. But what we want to teach kids is it's not so much the situation that can be dangerous, but how they interpret the situation that brings about anxiety. So, for instance, if you have two children, one of whom is afraid of dogs, and one child who loves dogs, they both might see a golden retriever bouncing around. If one child's first thought is, this is great, this looks like just like my dog, I'm going to throw the tennis ball for the dog, that child might be feeling very calm and happy and relaxed and maybe pick up a ball and start playing with the dog. the other child who sees a big bouncing golden retriever and thinks, oh, this dog might bite me, will become very anxious. And you would see them do the opposite things, maybe withdraw, back away, get scared, try to leave the situation. And there's nothing different about that situation, but it's the child's interpretation of the situation that really leads to the difference in how they respond.
So what comes to mind as you're saying this is that it sounds like you shouldn't just avoid something because it makes a child anxious. That's not a good way to help them learn to cope.
You're exactly right. And actually, what we know is that avoidance tends to make anxiety worse over time. So in that situation, what I think about is trying to help kids really understand what it is that their worry thoughts are, and then get them kind of playing detective and seeing if they can kind of test those thoughts and see how true they are. And then one really important thing for helping kids get through anxiety is trying to break down anxious situations into really tiny parts, and then actually encourage kids to be in those anxious situations and develop mastery in actually doing them and staying in them.
Yeah, exposure to what is fearful is probably the most effective component of treatment for anxiety. And it's really going to vary, too, based on the kid, how you would develop those steps that Dr. Younger was referencing. So in the dog example, one child may be afraid of dogs that are more active, and another child may be afraid of dogs that are increasing levels of size. So you would do a very tailored experience and get the child's feedback when you were planning to expose the child to those things to make sure you're really targeting what is fearful for the child. So if a child was afraid of very active dogs, if you were able to have some opportunities maybe to just learn about dogs and then work with very kind of calm, very passive sorts of dogs as an initial exposure opportunity, and even breaking that down, so maybe just viewing one from afar and kind of increasingly getting closer. It's a sort of thing that if it's really problematic for your child, it can be helpful to have that third-party person, such as a therapist, to help kind of guide those exercises. But there's certainly things you can do in the interim, which might include just modeling petting a dog, modeling kind of being calm in these situations. Kids can really pick up on parents' worries and anxiety, so just trying to be level-headed and calm. And if you notice your child is trying, reward them. Tell them some really specific feedback or praise. I really liked, I know dogs make you nervous, but I really liked how you kind of got a little closer and stayed on the street when the dog passed by. And rewards don't have to be things that cost money. They could be spending positive time together. And they should sort of match the level of kind of how extreme the exposure was. But the other important piece of the exposure is you want to make sure the child stays in the situation long enough to where they experience some reduction in their symptoms before you progress to a more kind of advanced exposure activity that might be more distressing.
And this can be tricky for parents because I think naturally we don't like to see our children in distress. And sometimes for kids who are really anxious, I mean, your heart goes out to them.
And you want to protect them.
And you want to protect them, right. And rescue them and do what you can. But ultimately, the signal that sort of sends the child is that I can't cope by myself. I need my parent to rescue me. Plus, you may accidentally be rewarding the anxiety with some positive parent attention. So we try to flip that a little bit and help parents to come up with plans where they can support their child and encourage them to use good coping skills to deal with those stressful situations.
Shelley in Forest Park joins us now. Good afternoon, Shelley.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I'm calling about my 14-year-old daughter. She is experiencing anxiety that we've noticed are starting at the beginning of the school year. She goes to a school that is very academically challenging. One of her subjects is Latin, and it's mandatory, and she's struggling with that, and it's affecting her sleep her patterns, where it's manifesting itself through head tremors. She actually shakes her head in the middle of the night, and she's aware that she's doing it, wakes up, and can't go back to sleep. We've had her tested through the neurology department at Children's, and thankfully nothing came back with that. But they really do think that it's anxiety-related. I'm just not sure what to do at this point.
Mm-hmm. That would be the sort of thing that I think could really benefit from having that objective third-party psychological provider who specializes in cognitive behavioral therapy. They could work with yourself and your daughter to help kind of teach her some coping strategies. And another thing that they can help facilitate, which could be useful, is maybe making some modifications in the school system so that it's not as stressful and demanding and kind of working with teachers and being that liaison to help kind of make some modifications, whether that's removing the very distressful stressing subject, removing Latin or maybe modifying how work is done for it, or being able to have opportunities to practice some relaxation during times where she's experiencing distress at school.
And I think the relaxation is a really great point that I think would be very helpful for your daughter to do. And for everyone in general, and for our kids who have anxiety in particular, is that when we have anxiety, lots of things happen in our bodies. Our hearts beat faster, our circulation changes, our digestion slows down, our muscles get tight, and that doesn't feel good. And if you can help kids practice relaxation on a regular basis when they're already calm, they can learn how to really shut down those processes when they're happening in their body and just get really attuned to picking up an anxiety when it's happening and then using those skills to calm their bodies back down.
How much can a parent be a role model? The child learns from you. You're coping with a stressful situation. They watch how you handle it. How important is that whole thing?
I think it's very important. Kids look to their parents all the time to see how parents respond to different events. So this is a great time for you to talk about that everybody has anxiety. It's nothing wrong with the child. We all have it. And here are some things that I do to help me calm down. I'm wondering what helps you calm down. Maybe we can do it together. So practicing yoga, reading a calm story, talking about a vacation, doing some muscle relaxation, and then practicing doing if the parent's saying, you know, I'm a little bit nervous about calling this new person, but I'm going to take some deep breaths and calm myself down. And I think it's going to go okay. And then doing that can show kids that you can confront situations that make you anxious and be successful.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk to Gabe in Loveland. Hi, Gabe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I had a question in regards to correlation between night terrors and anxiety. I have 5 kids, and a few of them suffer from night terrors, and some of them pretty extreme, but there's not a real visible sign of anxiety during the daylight hours. So I didn't know if there's a correlation between kind of anxiety and night terrors.
So I will try to answer that as best as I can, though I will say that is not my area of expertise. That's a great question for someone who specializes in sleep. But night terrors and nightmares are often confused. So night terrors happen when kids are actually asleep, and kind of the presentation is usually that kids will appear to be awake, but they are very, very, very distressed. You can't get them out of it. You can't wake them up. It may last for 10, 20 minutes, and then they go back to sleep, and they have no recollection of it in the morning. Versus nightmares are when kids are waking up, and they can talk about having a bad dream. Nightmares, kind of any sleep disruption, can be more likely to happen when kids are stressed during the day, and certainly nightmares often come up more for kids who are anxious. And that's when kind of talking about worries during the day and then coming up with relaxation plans before bedtime can be really helpful with sleep. Night terrors and nightmares also tend to happen in younger kids, and that a lot of times kids with night terrors will eventually grow out of them.
Thanks much for the call, Gabe. Brad in Middletown joins us now. Hi, Brad.
Hello. Yes, I was having some concerns about the trend in the last several decades that kids don't engage the world as freely or as independently as they did, and that they don't play in the neighborhoods unsupervised, they don't play in the woods anymore, and there seems to be an overemphasis on being happy all the time and of trying to be successful, and that there's something wrong when you're not feeling happy and successful. Do you think this has impacted the children?
It's interesting. I think that term helicopter parenting is kind of one that's used commonly to describe what you're talking about. And I think what the research shows in terms of what kind of helps make kids kind of well-developed and happy, productive members of society is having some of that autonomy, having that autonomy to fall on the playground without having the parent come and kind of intervene and sort of experiencing some of those struggles in a safe way, kind of on their own, as much as possible while still kind of recognizing some of the danger concerns. I think that's a really important thing. And again, well-meaning parents, myself included, may want to kind of get protective or kind of stand up for my child, but really by letting my children learn to kind of deal with those anxiety-provoking situations on their own, hopefully I'm arming them with skills that will help them in the future.
And this goes back to what we were saying earlier. Don't avoid the stressful situations. Expose the child and let them learn from them.
And another really good point that I think was brought up by that caller is that getting outside and getting sunshine and getting exercise can be a very powerful antidepressant, anti-anxiety strategy to use, mm-hmm. that when we're exercising, we're getting sunlight, we're building relationships with other people. That's a very healthy thing to do.
Let's talk to Stephen in Middletown. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. When I was a child many years ago, I was diagnosed with anxiety disorder. Well, later on, when I was adult, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and I was wondering, could those two be possibly correlated? Could you just go straight into anxiety disorder, or could it just manifest itself into bipolar disorder later on?
That's a great question. So there's research that shows that if you're diagnosed with anxiety in childhood, there's a subset of kids who might continue to experience the same type of anxiety. But oftentimes what might happen is they may develop other types of anxiety. And if you have anxiety in childhood, you're at more risk for developing mood disorders such as depressive disorder and also developing things such as substance dependence. And again, it's not that all children with anxiety will develop those things, but you are at increased risk in adulthood for kind of more complex mental health concerns.
And that speaks to the importance of really screening and intervening as early as possible. The idea is not to get rid of anxiety, but to kind of bring it back down to kind of typical levels and to give kids coping skills to set them up for as much success as possible and try to help kids grow in healthy ways.
And there's been really great data showing some maintenance of effects. So if kids learn CBT in childhood, up to 7 years later, there's been studies showing that they will continue to benefit based on the skills they learned in their childhood.
So how treatable is this? I mean, once you have an anxiety disorder, how effective is the treatment? Is this usually something that goes away, or is it something you have to learn to deal with the rest of your life?
The treatments are highly effective. So cognitive behavioral therapy is one of the most effective behavioral therapies. Some people also use antidepressants to treat anxiety disorder. There's evidence that that could be effective as well. And a recent paper in the New England Journal of Medicine said a combined approach may be even more effective. I think the important thing to think about is, you know, with CBT, you have the maintenance of effects after you're done using the intervention, and you're also not kind of exposing yourself to some of the potential side effects. I'm not a expert when it comes to medicine, but just certain things to consider when starting a course of intervention. But I certainly think it's something to talk about with your medical provider.
And Natasha, how much research is still going on in terms of anxiety in kids? I mean, is this an area that's still being looked into?
Quite a lot. I would say a lot of the recent research in treatment interventions pertains to how to make these interventions that we know are effective briefer and more accessible to people. So some of the research I'm doing is taking existing protocols that might be 12 or 14 sessions and really trying to package it so that people can maybe do some of it online and kind of meet for briefer numbers of sessions and still get those effects. So a lot of the research today, I think, is moving that way to really increase the reach of these interventions to people who need them.
And there are some really great apps for relaxation for kids. There are lots of great books for parents. There are self-help workbooks.
There's an app for relaxation for kids?
There are many apps for relaxation for kids. One in particular I like for little kids is, I think Sesame Street actually developed it, but it's called Breathe, Plan, Do, and teaches kids to recognize their changing feelings, not just anxiety, but frustration, fear, excitement, taking turns, teaches them to take some deep breaths, and then teaches them a problem-solving approach, which is really helpful, particularly with anxiety, is helping kids learn how to think through situations and to come up with different ideas about what they can do to make themselves feel more comfortable.
You're saying there are also a lot of books that parents can use as resources.
There are great books that parents can use. There are some health workbooks for children that they can use as well. And I'm happy to share that information with you, and people can get it offline maybe. But I definitely have some recommendations that might be helpful.
Yeah, Kate, Natasha, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
pediatric psychologist at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Catherine Younger, and pediatric psychologist and researcher in behavioral medicine and clinical psychology at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and assistant professor at the UC Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Natasha Cunningham. Coming up, we'll explore how too much stress can be physically toxic to child development. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.